Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 108 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. I will be your host. My name is Joseph Wade. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Hey, what's up, Joe?
Hey, John, how are you?
Oh, I'm alive.
That's all that God asks of you. And Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm enjoying this lovely Labor Day weekend that I have off. And I would have rather done nothing else but watch Christmas movies and talk about them with you, gents.
Well, you're in luck, buddy.
I mean, silver lining, we ruined Disney Plus's algorithm.
Oh, yeah, we absolutely murdered it.
Yeah, they're like, we had an infinity percent increase of people watching The Santa Claus 2. Not one, just two. It was increased from 0 to 3. That's an infinity percent increase.
It's asymptotic. Not asymptomatic. That's different. It's asymptotic.
Now, you know there's some, like, 4 or 5-year-old out there that, oh, bless their parents, has chosen The Santa Claus 2 as, like, their one movie that they watch over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
It's because the kid is obsessed with Judge Reinhold.
Yes.
Of so course.
This one Disney Plus account has 147 complete views of The Santa Claus 2.
Yeah, they stopped to watch The Santa Claus 3 for 15 minutes, realized it wasn't The Santa Claus 2, and went back to Santa Claus 2.
Oh, wait. Shoot.
Whoops.
Back up.
All right. I don't have a can to drink this week. I've got a bottle, so... If you didn't hear that, that's me opening my bottle of beer because this is going to get buck wild tonight.
I just realized the beer that I purchased for drinking for this episode has expired. So good job, store, but I'm also going to live dangerously today.
Smoke them while you got them.
Yes.
I'm right now drinking the first of the Sam Adams Oktoberfest for 2020.
Mazel tov.
Because it's that time of year, everybody. It's the late summer malaise where all of the holiday beers are starting to trickle into the stores. But not so much the holiday beers, just the pumpkin-flavored everything.
Barf.
Pumpkin-flavored beers, pumpkin spice lattes, pumpkin-flavored apple fritters, I'm guessing. Pumpkin-flavored Twinkies, I saw, were a thing that's coming down the pike. We have gone pumpkin crazy, and I absolutely hate it.
I'm about to get a pumpkin-flavored bullet.
Why would you say that?
I always figured if I just killed myself, I wouldn't have to be on the podcast anymore, but I think you'd find a way. Like, I just come back wrapped in chains with that stupid toothache cloth around my head, just being like, I guess it's time to record another podcast.
No, we would absolutely hire a spirit medium on payroll in order to channel you for every single episode. Do not worry about it.
Yeah. Oh boy, we would have Jonathan Five's head in a ball like Madame Leota. It would be horrifying.
Although we would have to change your name to the Ghost of Christmas Present.
The Ghost of Christmas Presents?
Yes.
All well and good.
Because he's present for the podcast? Come on.
Yes, of course. And if there's anything spookier than a haunted Christmas gift, I don't know what it is.
Let's change Madame Whatever in a crystal ball to John B. the Genie and we got a deal.
Okay. Make a fuck yourself, John. I'm sorry, that was needlessly mean of me.
Well, guess what else is needlessly mean? You're right in the spirit of this movie.
Yeah, I apologize. I usually don't want to inflict grievous bodily harm on myself. Tim Allen just brings it out in you.
Yeah, this once again, if you haven't read the title of the episode yet, we are discussing The Santa Claus 2 tonight, which is... an auspicious occasion for a number of reasons. Actually, no, just the one, because this is the film that we tried and failed to record a podcast about 3 years ago. This is our fabled lost episode, was about The Santa Claus 2, and it's been lost to the annals of time.
And the reason it took us 3 years was because, holy shit, this movie makes you want to kill yourself.
Yeah, we had to give ourselves enough distance between those original bad vibes to decide that, you know what, Labor Day of 2020 was the day to come back around to Santa Claus 2. And it was a good idea in theory, but then we enacted this idea of ours, and I wish we had done literally anything else.
That's pretty much the subtitle of our podcast, is a good idea in theory, but not in practice.
Christmas Creeps, : I wish we had done literally anything else.
What year did this film originally come out?
2002.
And it was direct to video, correct?
Oh no, I saw this in the theater.
Oh god.
I remember seeing this in theaters with my mom. I was 16 years old. Because there's nothing cooler than seeing a Christmas movie with your mom when you're 16.
I was going to make fun of you, but then I thought that's just punching so, so low. Such a below the belt hit. I'm just going to let that statement stand by itself.
No, I firmly own that my whatever this is. It's one of those memories that you have of being a teenager and watching movies with your parents that you probably shouldn't be watching. Only in my case, it's watching G-rated crap like The Santa Claus 2 and not, you know, Showgirls.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how mortified were you that you would run into somebody that you knew from school?
Roughly a 7.
Yeah, I'd say. I think that's about right.
Oh, man. So I can't even ask, had you guys seen this before? Because obviously we have. We've basically done this podcast already, so it's up to us to try to remember back to what we even said about this 3 whole years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, if we do recycle jokes, or even recycle jokes from the Santa Claus 1, whatever, the planet's dying, we're doing our part, it's a green episode.
I think I consumed enough alcohol during the recording of that episode, and certainly enough alcohol between the two recordings of this episode, that anything at all that I had said is thoroughly memory-holed. I remember I was recording it in a stairwell, and I drank like two of the 750 liter bottles, and I had a very good time.
Oh, wow.
Brad
having his own little party, talking to himself in a stairwell. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good time.
I love it.
Was had by all.
Where to begin tonight with the Santa Claus 2? I guess the first place to begin is the fact that this is a sequel that took, 1994 was the original, so the sequel came out 8 whole years later. Which is wild. Which is wild when you think about how much the world had changed between 1994 and 2002.
Let's put this into a little bit more perspective.
Okay.
I know you probably know this off the dome piece. Toy Story 2, when did that come out?
1999.
Okay, so that's scans. So at that point, I think Tim Allen had run through all of the Coke money that he had gotten from recording as Mr. Buzz Lightyear in Toy Story 2. So it's time to trot out the other seminal workhorse, Santa Claus.
Yeah, and I think at that point, Home Improvement had either officially ended or was winding down.
I feel like it was definitely in syndication by that point.
Okay, yeah. Home Improvement ended in 1999. So yeah, Toy Story 2 and Home Improvement were contemporary. So he coasted on those fumes for a couple of years. And then somebody at Disney said, hey, remember that movie you did 8 years ago? How would you like to make a sequel to that? We'll give you a whole lot more money. And it's going to be a great time. What the hell was that?
What the hell was what?
It sounded like somebody was squishing the blob right in front of the microphone.
That was me taking a big sip of this Cole Haas, buddy.
Okay. It sounded like Brad was being inappropriate with a horror movie villain from the 50s.
Yeah. So that puts it in the frame of reference.
But also, the thing that, to me, makes this different from the first is that this is a post-9/11 Santa Claus film. Actually, you know what? No, you know what? No, the more I think about this, that statement, there is surprisingly little post 9/11 anxiety in this film for a movie come out in late 2002.
Do you think it was written before and they did not do any workshopping or punch it? They didn't punch it up after 9/11. It was written before. Possibly.
It's possible.
I want to say after the success of, because Santa Claus did very well for itself, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
I would have to imagine that the writers, same writers, probably the same writers. I didn't do any research this Christmas.
Oh, piece. No, absolutely not. Not the same writers at all.
Okay, well, anyways, I am sure there were a couple of spec scripts for Santa Claus 2 floating around fairly recently, fairly close after Santa Claus came out.
There are 5 credited writers, and none of them are the 2 writers from the first movie.
Okay. Still, my point stands. I'm sure that work was already being done on Santa Claus 2 after the success of the first, and the powers that be decided not to produce this film until 2002.
Until after 9/11.
Yeah.
They had it in the vault, and then, you know, the world changed on 9/11, and then they said, you know what the world needs right now? More of Tim Allen as Santa Claus.
John, the Santa Claus, looked at his TV and said, you know what? I really have to hold on to what matters. So he decides That's right. to call up Gerald Disney and say, Gerald,
it's time.
It's time. I'm done being afraid. I'm going to live boldly. We're making the Santa Claus 2.
And Gerald hung up the phone and said, you know what? You're right. Liv Moss. And he picked up the other phone on the other side of his desk and said, Tim, it's Gerald Disney. Gerald G. Disney.
You know that new sound you've been looking for?
Well, listen to this. And then it's the sound of Smokey Robinson singing Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Which is how this movie starts.
Yes, it is.
Oh, boy.
So we have a surprising amount of cast returning, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost... Yeah, too many cast members.
too many cast members.
No, because Scott, yes, Tim Allen is back as Scott Calvin, a.k.a. Santa Claus. His son, Charlie, is once again played by Eric Lloyd. His ex-wife and her new husband are back. Judge Reinhold specifically is back. Bernard the Elf is back. And that's about it.
They changed Judy, didn't they?
Yeah, Judy's gone.
Wasn't Judy Asian in the first one?
I don't think Judy's even in the film. I think it's a different character entirely.
Oh, okay.
Probably because that actress, I'm going to guess, grew up.
Yeah.
Who's, right, who's so. Judy?
Like the Coco attendant?
In the first one, yeah.
Oh, like the elf who's totally trying to get Santa to fuck. Okay. Like, that not fuck the, her, but like she's like, okay, I gotta make sure Santa fucks.
Yes. John, could you unpack that for us a little bit, please?
Her entire job is to like basically make sure Santa works, and she's like, okay, we have to get Santa married. Like she is grooming Santa so Santa is like fuckable by someone else. That's her point. She is like how to put it, in The Simpsons when Homer got the executive assistant, that's this elf.
Well, yeah, she's like the secretary elf, essentially, for lack of a better term. She's like the personal valet. She's like a valet. She brings
which
him
is
cocoa.
Wild. Which is wild because Santa has like 3 personal valets in this film.
Yes, he does.
Because Bernard is back, and again, I'm still baffled as to why Bernard is not actually running the place as the new Santa.
Yeah. Maybe there's a weird thing where elves can't be Santas. But maybe. I mean, they call Santa a jolly old elf in other literature, so maybe that doesn't scan.
Maybe it, not.
Yet again, with the first Santa Claus, we had more questions than answers. There are more questions than answers in this one, too.
I don't want to put too much emphasis on this point, but the fact that they got David Krumholtz to play the head elf is very... That's the thing.
I mean, that was the thing back in the 90s, and they kind of just had to roll with it.
Yeah, they're just like, we got, like, the most Jewish guy we could find to be the head elf. Is that okay? Like, yeah, sure, what the fuck ever.
And, you know, I was looking at the IMDb trivia for this movie, because that's what counts as research. And it said in the trivia for Santa Claus 2 that the role of Bernard was also considered for Drew Carey and Matthew Broderick.
Oh, my God.
It made me wonder if they were talking about this film or the original, because to have David Krumholtz play Bernard in their first film and then to change him and turn him into Drew Carey for the sequel would have been amazing. like, oh, no, no reason. He's just tall and blonde and wears glasses now. You know, Bernard, Drew, elves change.
Drew absorbed him.
The plot of the Santa Claus
right.
2.
Is the subtitle of this one the Mrs. Claus?
This one doesn't have a subtitle.
Because yeah, I know 3 is the Escape Clause.
Right. But this one, I think they marketed it as the Mrs. Claus, but I don't think it's the official title.
Okay.
But that's very much basically the plot of the film. Santa Claus discovers that he has 4 weeks before Christmas to get married, and if he does not get married, he reverts back to his old asshole Tim Allen Scott Calvin self.
You think they could have mentioned this at some point in the last 8 years, but...
Yeah, or even when he took the job.
Yes.
Because it seems kind of important to have a divorced dad become Santa Claus and not explain, oh, you also have to get remarried at some point.
Yeah. Okay, so there's this scene where they're revealing it. So you have the card that Scott picks up at the beginning of the first film that turns him into the big man.
Yeah.
And they use these increasingly large... microscopes, these increasingly large magnifying lenses, to zoom in on the text that's hidden inside the text that he must find, must find a wife within whatever number of years, or he doesn't have a job anymore.
Apparently that number is 8 years.
Yeah. Just
arbitrary, you know, whatever.
Can I say, obviously this is a movie that may have even been written before the turn of the century and was released in 2002, but... very heterocentric of you, North Pole. Like, what if the guy who slipped on the suit just happens to prefer dudes or nobody? What happens then?
What if a woman put on the suit?
What if a woman put on the suit? What would happen then, huh?
What if
we'd all be wearing shoes on our hands? It'd be all higgledy piggledy.
I mean, I'm
people could marry dogs.
It could happen.
It's a slippery slope.
It's a pretty good Tim Allen impression.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. No. So that joke is well and truly murdered. So Santa has to go home and find a wife in 4 weeks. Congratulations. Good job. Have fun. In the meantime, they have to lie to the elves for some reason to let them know that Santa is still around, which I don't understand. Like,
why didn't they just put Bernard in charge? Because he seems to have
just put Bernard in charge.
Seems to have everything under control.
He does all of the work anyway. Santa just sits in his office and drinks cocoa. Who cares?
He already reviewed the Naughty and Nice. They literally say, and they full put it out, Santa already reviewed the Naughty and Nice list.
Yeah. I mean, it's a month before Christmas. How much work does he still possibly have, really?
Really?
But no, we're belaboring the point because to fool the elves into thinking that Santa Claus is still at work and not at home trying to get laid, they invent the Brendel pod from The Fly, and they put Santa Claus through the Brendel pod, and out comes Santa Claus and also a giant toy Santa Claus. That
he's terrible.
He's a nightmare.
Worst. And Tim Allen, throughout this entire movie, whenever he's dressed as Santa, I think he thinks it's making him look jolly or something, but he's just fucking sneering.
Yeah.
Like he's smiling, but only by curling his upper lip.
And he is a complete asshole to all of the elves, and presumably has been an asshole for 8 whole years. And I don't think they notice or care.
And then he goes and plays football with them, which is just like, he's just tackling little kids at this point. Good job, Santa.
Yeah, yeah. They hired a bully, and you know what? They all love him. And I don't think they actually love him. I think it's Stockholm Syndrome. They're all terrified of him.
They fear him.
Well, if they fear him now, just hold the phone. Hold on a minute.
Well, I mean, you never know. Maybe we don't know about the last Santa. Maybe the last Santa was literally actually Hitler. Like, Hitler's in the Führer bunker trying to think what happens, and then he just finds this red coat and puts it on.
You know, they don't talk enough about how Santa was actually German.
Well, Hitler was Austrian, so.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Okay. That's right. Santa can't be Hitler. You're right. Santa's German.
No. This fake Santa Claus.
It's the fucking worst.
Do you get? Have you guys ever seen the Primus music video, why known as Big Brown Beaver?
Nope.
Am I the only one who has this rattling around in his brain?
Yes.
Okay, well, then I'm going to have to share this with you, because this is all I could think about this entire fucking movie whenever Tim Allen shows up. Is...
Wait, real Tim Allen or plastic toy
plastic,
Tim Allen?
Plastic fake Tim Allen.
Okay.
It's just this music video of this band Primus playing three, like, toy cowboys, and they look like giant plastic monstrosities. And it came out, like, a whole... 7 or 8 years before Santa Claus 2. So I have to assume they stole this look from them.
You sent us a link.
Also, this is my opportunity to put a Primus music video in the show notes for two podcasts.
Oh my. I'm watching this now. This is awakening something in me, and I don't like it.
One guy looks kind of like Owen Wilson.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe Owen Wilson looks like a plastic monster cowboy.
Yes.
So then there's a scene where Santa summons what's the assholes from the Jack Frost movie called?
The Guardians?
Yeah, the Guardians of the Galaxy. He summons the Guardians of the Galaxy. It's Aisha Tyler as Mother Nature, Peter Boyle's Father Time, Worf is the Sandman, Kevin Pollak's Cupid. It's just a bunch of random character actors like, hey, I know that guy. Oh, he's in the movie for 30 seconds. Cool. Thanks, movie.
And then Art LaFleur is the Tooth Fairy. And if you had asked me, if you'd shown me this scene out of context and said, which one of these characters do you think is going to play a major pivotal role in this film? I don't know that I would have guessed correctly. Because, as it turns out, the Tooth Fairy becomes integral to the third act of this film. And part of me wondered at a certain point, like, why is the Tooth Fairy just some middle-aged man? But then it occurred to me, oh, right, he's a dentist. The Tooth Fairy is a dentist.
The Tooth Fairy is a pervert.
A little bit.
And I'm not just talking about this Tooth Fairy. I'm talking about Tooth Fairy in general.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen those creepy dolls that people make out of children's teeth. It's horrifying.
Wait, people making dolls out of teeth? The only reason you should be making anything out of teeth is if you are, like, a villain in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign. That's the only time you get away with, like, oh, you're clearly evil.
John, did you know you can buy bottles of human teeth off of Etsy of varying levels of decay? Like, I found a store that has bottles of human teeth, and there's a little drop-down here. You can select how decayed they are. I'm not joking about this. Let me see if I can find that.
Oh.
Creepy doll children's teeth. I hate this. Good lord. Why?
This is what parents do with their baby's teeth. Brad.
Are you kidding me?
This is what you have to look forward to.
Most people just put them in a box and then forget about them.
I'm fairly certain my parents just threw mine away.
Fair enough. I mean, what are you going to do with those teeth other than this monstrosity?
Plant them in the backyard and hope they grow into little tooth trees. That's all you can do. That's all you can reasonably do with a child's tooth. Otherwise, it's creepy and weird, and you just need to get rid of it. Nobody needs to see that.
Yeah. I'm just imagining, like, a cartoon shark wearing a human tooth necklace.
Jabberjaw goes Hawaiian.
Yeah.
Jinx. Oh, very good. But no, so what is the purpose of this council meeting?
I thought it was just like the semi-annual fictional...
It's the fucking board meeting.
Yeah, it's the public domain legendary figure board meeting.
It's, hey, for some reason we want this movie to be an hour and 44 fucking minutes long. Yes. Why don't we have a bunch of characters that show up for 5 seconds each and do one joke, and that joke's the character. Oh, hey, it's Father Time. He's, you know, he's old. It's the Sandman. He's asleep. Ha ha ha. Cool. Thanks,
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, Commander Worf literally sleeps through this entire movie.
Da-dum.
But no, what I'm really asking is, like, okay, so I know that it's the their, like, annual board meeting of mythological figures or whatever. But then, like, new business, then Santa Claus has to stand up and say, hi, I have to get married in 4 weeks or else I die. And they're all like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. And then the scene ends. So I have to assume that the whole only reason that scene exists is so that when the Tooth Fairy wanders into the film in the third act, it's not a complete like left field turn.
Is this the first time we've run into Kevin Pollak on the podcast?
I can't imagine that's true.
I'm looking at his list. He's in a movie called The Sex Monster. I think he played the sex monster.
That scans.
I'm not seeing anything else he would have been in that we've seen.
Okay, yeah, this is in fact the first time we've encountered Kevin Pollak, which is crazy to me because Kevin Pollak has been in literally every movie ever made. And considering we've done over 100 of these things, I'm shocked we've never encountered Kevin Pollak before.
I think I'm more shocked that Kevin Pollak's managed to only be in this as a Christmas movie. I guess Santa Claus 3 as well, because all of these assholes return in Santa Claus 3.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. So, oh, stay tuned for that, because Santa Claus 3 is coming. Hey, have I ever told you guys the time that I saw Kevin Pollak in Hollywood?
No.
So, about 10 years ago, I guess, I was in Hollywood doing, you know, touristy stuff, and I got on one of those tours of the Hollywood Hills buses that you can get on, where they take you through the neighborhoods and say, oh, yeah, that's Tobey Maguire's house, that's Leonardo DiCaprio's house, and you don't know, it could just be a random house.
I'm just imagining now that Kevin Pollak was on this tour just being like, it's the bus that goes closest to my house.
This is how I get downtown.
This is how I get to work in the mornings. You're not far off. But so the bus comes out of the hills and back in like into the city area, and we're at a stoplight, and I look over, and at the Starbucks on the corner, I look down, and I know it's Kevin Pollak, because he's just sitting there at a table reading his, you know, newspaper, drinking a coffee, and I just kind of say out loud, hey, that's Kevin Pollak. The bus driver hears me, looks over, and then gets on the horn and goes, attention everybody, to your right is Kevin Pollak.
If it was anybody but Kevin Pollak, I would feel sorry for them. Kevin Pollak deserves it.
Kevin Pollak looks up from his newspaper, sees the bus, sees me, and gives me the finger, and then the bus drives off.
Love it. That's very good.
That is my closest encounter with a Hollywood celebrity. If only it had been Tim Allen.
Tim Allen would have chased the bus down.
Probably.
Thank you for letting me achieve my dream of owning a jar of stranger's teeth. It is truly a blessing.
Brad, are you still looking at teeth? Stop! So Scott goes home and discovers that Charlie has been put on the naughty list because Charlie is a terrorist. No. See, this is a post-9/11 movie. No, Charlie is protesting his principal's anti-Christmas policy at school by spray-painting graffiti on the school walls. And Scott has to deal with the principal, who is very attractive.
Hey, can you guess who ends up being his wife at the end of the movie? Surprise!
I'm going to say, let's see, how many female characters that aren't literal children we have in this movie? We have the principal, we have Mother Nature.
And his ex-wife.
His ex-wife.
The only one we can reasonably like cross off the list is the ex-wife.
Yeah. I don't know if he could take a supernatural entity as his wife.
I mean, sure. I don't know that he could take her, period, but you know, whatever.
Right. You know what I mean.
I know, and I'm being gross, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, this is like an episode of fucking Law & Order. Oh, it's the one character we don't know? Found the killer.
Yeah, that's true. Well, no, he goes on exactly one other date, and it's like, it's probably the worst scene in the film, because he goes on a date with Molly Shannon, and she's basically in the film long enough to show off two things. One, her Santa Claus sweater, which has a very creepy Tim Allen as Santa Claus picture on her sweater. And then she sings.
It's also like a weird, gross iron-on decal. It's the worst, and it's shiny, and it's something about it. I hate it.
Yeah, and it actually is fucking Tim Allen, too. Dear God.
Yeah, and it's the worst, because just imagine you go on a date with, like, any other person, and they show up, and unbeknownst to them, they have your picture on their t-shirt. I would get up and walk away, and
I possibly never leave my house again. Serial killer would do.
Yes! Especially when, like, we don't really know how they set this date up, so I'm assuming that it was an online dating thing.
I think it was supposed to be one of his ex-wife's, like, friends or coworkers.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
They do mention that. She's like, oh, I have some folks in my address book I might be able to set you up with.
Okay.
Or something like that.
Oh, right, because there's that scene where, like, they try to set, like, get him ready for his date, and fucking Neil puts on one of his Bill Cosby sweaters.
Yes.
Tim Allen in the Bill Cosby sweater is, like, it's a look in 2002 that I don't think plays as well in 2020 for a number of reasons.
Can I just say, Judge Reinhold seems like he was at least he was maybe having a good time filming this movie.
Oh, because he has absolutely nothing to do and he's just here for the paycheck.
Yes. He gets to be in like 5 scenes, ham it up for 25 seconds, and then leave.
And they took him to McDonald's in that one scene.
Yes.
I just picture Judge Reinhold in the back seat going, we get to go to McDonald's?
They're driving over, the judge is just like, hey, why don't we go to McDonald's? It could be in the movie even.
Product placement,
gets
everybody.
Up there and orders Egg McMuffin.
The most conspicuous product placement ever.
I was pretty hungry.
The only other bit of product placement in the entire film, and the thing that dates this as a very 2002 movie, is we see Scott's, I guess it's his, like, stepdaughter now? Is it his ex-wife's, like, current daughter? Current daughter.
Yeah, it's like
this kid was like a baby in the first movie. But she's like says she's sick, so that can't be the case. Yeah,
but also she calls him Uncle Scott.
Yeah, she's Reinhold.
So I don't know if he's actually her uncle or if
that's what you do with a kid when you don't want to explain complicated familiar relationships. Oh, it's just that's your uncle.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Well, anyway, in her bedroom on the wall there is a very prominent Kim Possible poster.
Oh, I
guess this is a Disney film from 2002.
Didn't notice that.
The sweaters are very blatantly was it Coogie is the brand? Is that how you pronounce it?
Coogie. COOGI.
Yeah.
That's true. Man, this is just a dead zone of potential here. This whole movie.
It's the doldrums of comedy.
Cause it's the plot of the movie is Santa Claus needs to fuck. What the hell?
Yeah, and of course he does, because, well, there's a sequel, so obviously he does. But, you know, it's the one woman in the film that could only conceivably be his romantic prospect. Of course it's them. And this is not like an actual romantic comedy where there is tension and stakes and people's feelings get hurt. No, this is just a Disney children's film where Tim Allen has to woo a woman in 30 minutes or less.
The only sort of tension is while he's out looking for a wife, he has a watch that says how much Santa magic he has left. He only has like 10 mana points, I guess. And like when he summons a sleigh, it costs 4 mana points or some shit. Yeah. But then he takes Carol. Oh, her name's Carol. Haha. To the Christmas party for the school district. And he just does the same thing he does, which is like, hey, I can just magically creep on all of you and know what present you didn't get as a kid.
I mean, it's a pretty good trick.
And I want to point out that one of the kids' adults basically got, like, 1960s Beyblades.
Yeah, I saw that, it's yeah.
Like, it's a fighting top arena. It's amazing. Yeah, it's just the same thing, where they all get toys from that they didn't get when they were little, that they wanted, that they never told anyone they wanted. Body block.
Toss across!
Yeah.
Rock'em Sock'em Robots!
So it's the movie is the series is very much walking in circles, just well trodden ground.
It's everything you saw from the original, but either amped up to 11 or just kind of repeated for no reason.
Like someone got told they couldn't say wiener whistle in this movie anymore.
That's not getting past the censors.
You know, we never talked about in the first film how the psychiatrist in the first film wants a wiener whistle and how that may or may not be a Freudian thing for him.
Yeah.
But there it is.
There you have it.
My guess is the entire complexity of it is, isn't it funny to make an adult say wiener?
Yes. Especially one that they, in the first movie, they play him as like so stodgy and like uptight, which he's the complete polar opposite in this movie, which is kind of odd. I don't know.
Yeah, but also he is, I mean, he's every bit as like sarcastic and mean as Tim Allen is now. So I have to assume that his like Scott's asshole persona rubbed off on Neil. And now Neil is every bit as bad as Scott is.
Yeah, I don't think we can overstate, by the way, how much of a fucking asshole Tim Allen is in this movie. Like, from Jump Street. Like, when he gets called in to go to the principal's a meeting because his kid literally spray-painted, like, the school gym up. He did a very pretty good job, actually. Like, pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah. For, like, a 14, 15-year-old? Yeah, that's like, you know, professional-level work.
Can we also mention how they introduce a love interest for his son, but they never touch on it ever again?
Yeah, there's just this girl helping him out, and he almost kisses her, but then he literally falls through a skylight.
And then we never see from her again.
Nope. No, we see her again later, but it's like it's never, ever brought up again. Like, nope, no, the tension's gone.
Well, there's the one scene later where Jake is talking to his dad. No, is it Jake? Charlie. Jesus. I'm thinking of Jake Lloyd.
Because the kid is Eric Lloyd.
Welcome to Star Wars chat, everybody. You didn't think we'd get there, but we got there. But no.
Kevin Pollak plays Watto in this movie. Here, let's talk about Kevin Pollak for a little bit more. You know how they had Kevin Pollak being Cupid and he was like flying around really little? They didn't have to actually do any movie magic. That's just the actual size of Kevin Pollak.
I've seen him in person. He is, in fact, 3.5 feet tall. No. It's pretty crazy. Gremlins,
It was Kevin Pollak in a suit playing Gizmo.
Kevin Pollak was voiced by Halle Mandel. Yeah, that makes sense. It's pretty crazy how this film has a Star Wars connection and a Star Trek connection.
Kevin Pollak was the only live-action character in Team America World Police.
Stop! Stop! You murdered me! You're killing me!
The Amazing Shrinking Man was based on Kevin Pollak's life. But no, the real actual, like, okay, so there's all of this is going, all of this Scott has to find a wife stuff is going on. And I actually love the smash cut that they do where Scott and the principal, Mrs. Newman, kiss at the teacher's party. And then the film immediately smash cuts to Toy Santa is now literally Stalin. He's wearing like the black suit with the black beret, and he's got an army of gigantic toy soldiers bossing all of the elves around. And he's decided that every child in the world is naughty and every child in the world is going to get coal for Christmas.
Hey, not to spend too much time picking out the logical flaws of this movie, but
too late.
Why is it that that's the joke. Why is it that they've said, oh, this toy Santa has all the memories of the real Santa, yet they have to teach him what the fuck being Santa is?
Because it's a children's movie from 2002 and they don't want to do a whole montage of teaching Santa how to use the bathroom.
Well, also, they need a reason for the toy Santa to be evil. So, okay, so he has to read the rule book and he has to realize that people fudge the rule book all the time. But that's naughty, so he's going to punish everybody.
I mean, it's like Robot 101, where it's like the prime directive is to, you know, follow all of the rules exactly to the letter, which like the little nerd elf, which we haven't even touched on, is like, yeah, exactly. And so he's following everything to the letter and it turns him into fascist Santa.
Right. You know, and the three laws of robotics, Isaac Asimov put this very clearly. A robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. Okay, this robot Santa does that. He's not actually willfully malicious. A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Well, he breaks that one pretty flagrantly, I think, because he reads the rule book and realizes that everybody is being naughty.
But is he doing real bodily harm by gifting children coal instead of presents? I mean, I guess emotional harm.
Yeah, emotional harm is not bodily harm. So I think that's perfectly okay within the realms of what a robot's allowed to do.
Well, then once all those kids breathe in all the coal dust, you have an entire generation with black lung.
Well, they shouldn't breathe that coal dust. They should have used it for its intended purpose. It's the rules. Those are the rules. If the kids follow the rules.
They're kids. They're going to eat the coal. You know that.
You and I know that, but Robot Santa doesn't know that. But anyway, Robot Santa is turning the North Pole into a despotic regime. And boy, oh boy, let me tell you, watching this movie in 2020...
It's a real feeling, huh?
Gave me a little tiny bit of a panic attack because I see the things that are going on in this country, and then I see how Bernard has to put on the happy face and lie to all the elves about, you know, what Santa is like now. And you know what, Bernard? This is all your fucking fault.
Man, I didn't know Quisling was an elf name.
Yeah. It's a mood.
It's really a mood. And, you know, after the events of this film happen, we cannot let Bernard get off scot-free. We cannot let Curtis get off scot-free because they're the ones who made this all possible.
We cannot let Scott get off scot-free.
No, Scott's okay. Scott is perfectly okay, but I appreciate the wordplay.
Thank you.
So, hey, actually, you know what? Let's talk about this. This is yet another Christmas film that uses a Christmosity meter as a ticking clock.
I like to think that there are tiny little J.O. crystals inside that watch.
I wasn't even thinking about that, but you know what? You're right. So Bernard puts his own personal J.O. crystals into Scott's watch, right? He has his own collection, and he puts them into Scott's watch. But no, it's the same thing as, you know, as an elf, where the Christmas spirit meter is dangerously low. It's the same thing in all of the Santa Buddies films where the magic J.O. crystal is threatening to melt and destroy Christmas forever.
But guess what? Whoops, he takes it down to zero, and he's never allowed to come back to the North Pole, but guess what? Whoops, it doesn't matter.
I think the point more was that if he took it down to zero, he didn't have a way to get back to the North Pole on his own.
Yeah. Oh.
It was like a, hey, Santa, if you use all your magic, you got to take a long rest, buddy.
I thought it was the gate is closed. Like,
yeah, the gate is closed. Game over. Ganon has returned.
So Santa goes down with a reindeer. He goes down with Comet, I think.
Yeah,
Comet. And Comet, I think, is voiced by Adam Sandler, maybe, because the entire movie Comet's just like, ba-da-doo-dop, ba-da-doo-dop.
It's the worst, and I hate the reindeer in this reindeer film.
Voice. You know, I assumed it was it was Frank Welker, but apparently it's not.
Chet is much worse than Comet.
Yes.
Yeah, Chet is immediately, oh, that's Kath Susie. Oh, well, enjoy your paycheck, Kath.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, it's so bad, though. All the reindeer, just the worst.
The movie cannot stop itself from making a reindeer fart joke. For absolutely no reason. Because, hey, this is a G-rated kids film, and we need to have an animal fart. Or else, what are we doing here?
Because SC wants to go home, but once he learns the terrible news of what's going on, however, the reindeer has eaten a bunch of candy and is unable to fly because it's a G-rated children's movie.
Oh no, Comet ate all of the Halloween candy.
Fart.
And at this point, Curtis has escaped the North Pole with a jetpack to ask Scott for help. And Scott's like, well, why don't we just use your jetpack? And Curtis says, it burned up in reentry. And then my question was, did he go to space? Does the elf jetpack send you to space?
I think the thing the movie is hinting at but never touches on is that Curtis is dumb as fuck.
Oh, Curtis is hella dumb. He's too stupid to live, but that's not stopping him now, is it?
I mean, I think the only reason keeping him alive is that elves are immortal.
100%, yes.
Like, elves are immune to, like, whatever toxins you get when you try to eat pine needles. That's the only reason he's still alive. So, you know what? Fuck it. The little girl loses a tooth, so the tooth fairy shows up, and they hitch a ride with him back to the North Pole. And there's a big stupid fight, and the elves all have an uprising that doesn't really do anything until Scott shows up. And then Scott saves the day, I puke the end.
Oh, also, What's-Her-Face has a, like, she thinks she's being mocked when he tells her he's Santa, but then Charlie shows up with the snow globe, is like, here, Christmas magic's real, because you can't believe it. Here, just have hard evidence, you big dummy. And then she hitches a ride with Charlie. How do they get to the North Pole?
Oh, because Charlie knocks his own tooth out. And they hitch a ride with the Tooth Fairy.
That's right. That's right. And then she becomes Mrs. Santa, a.k.a. Mrs. Claus.
Carol Claus. Oh, that's cute.
It's a thing.
Then the wedding is presided over by Mother Nature, I guess.
Oh, and they have it before he delivers all the toys because he needs to do it by Christmas Eve.
Yeah, because it happens at midnight or else, you know, Santa Claus turns back into a pumpkin and then
he immediately turns back into a fat Santa 2 seconds after the wedding. Which I'm pretty sure Carol's at the point, like, is it too late for annulments? Because,
No, it's fine, because after the film is over, during the end credits, there's a scene where she's, like, dancing around the North Pole, and she's fat now, too. Everybody gets a happy ending.
Good job, movie.
It's a thing.
It's certainly an ending, all right. And I can only imagine that she magically drops all of that weight for the sequel, which definitely happened, fairly quickly after this film, as far as these things go. Because this film made, I think it made a lot of money. I want to say it made a lot of money. Yeah. It made on a budget of $65 million. This film cost $65 million, y'all.
That's so many dollars.
And it made $173.
That's too many dollars.
It almost tripled its budget, which means they definitely made a sequel. But guess what? The original film cost like $20 million. This sequel cost $60 million. Can you hazard a guess as to how much money the third film cost?
$85 million.
J-Man, hazard a guess?
Okay, just before I start talking, I'm going to say it is in no way libelous or slanderous to talk about Tim Allen doing coke, because Tim Allen was literally arrested for coke and got out of it for selling all of his coke friends down the river.
Yes, that literally happened.
So that said, I'm pretty sure about $20 million of this movie's budget was just buying cocaine for Tim Allen.
And he hid it in his beard on screen in the film.
Okay, so the third movie, basically the entire rest of the cast came back, plus Martin Short.
Okay, so John's not going to answer the question.
I'm working through this. The question is how the budget of Santa Claus 3. So we have the same star power plus Martin Short, he's a name. You've heard of him before.
What year did this come out?
2006. I know that. But it's a crappy sequel. They probably skimped as much as they possibly could on special effects. I'm going to say going to say Santa Claus 3 was $40 million to make.
John is on the right track. Brad, I forgot what you said.
I said 85.
Okay. So Brad went higher, John went lower. The budget for Santa Claus 3, $12 million.
And literally all of that went to salaries. There was absolutely nothing else. There's no way.
Yeah, no. And I do recall Santa Claus 3 being absolutely fucking horrendous. So,
like, I am amazed that you even get Tim Allen to show up for less than, like, $20
million. That's what I kind of thought.
I mean, he was doing all kinds of stupid shit for Disney. Like, when was Jungle to Jungle?
96 or 97. That had Martin Short in it too. I mean, around that time he was doing, you know, Jungle to Jungle and Toy Story 2. Galaxy Quest was in that time. And
wasn't Home Improvement an ABC joint? So that was kind of a Disney. That was in the Disney ocean at that point.
Yeah, Tim Allen was swimming in Disney money for like pretty much all of the 90s.
Yeah, the Shaggy Dog was actually after Christmas with the Cranks.
Christmas with the Cranks, I forgot about that one. Yeah, yeah. Point being, Tim Allen, you know, was in no danger in the mid-2000s of falling out of favor with Disney. Now, I'm not so sure. But I want to compare this film to one other film before we sort of wrap this thing up here. So, the original came out in the 90s, was kind of a big hit on a modest budget. And it was actually a film that was kind of about something. It was about this dad learning to be kind of a divorced dad, but also, the Santa Claus was basically a metaphor for Tim Allen being a divorced dad in the 90s. And so then in the 2000s, they bring it back, put a little bit more money into it, make it more epic, more CGI, bullshit out the wazoo, give it a love story it really doesn't need. Guys, this is the Matrix Reloaded of Christmas films.
told us you were gonna compare this to a movie and we weren't gonna like it, but I think it's so apt.
But and you know what? It kind of fits though, because this movie like has, it kind of does what the first one does, but not quite as good. It has way more CGI than the first one did, but it's not quite as good.
It cost way more money, was very successful, but is not fondly remembered.
And was intentionally like marketed to appeal to as wide an audience as possible. Hmm. And yet, it's still not the worst of the three.
You know, if you ask me right now to recall a single plot point of The Matrix Reloaded with a gun to my head, I don't think I could tell you. Is that the one with the fight scene on the trucks on the highway with the white guy dreads? Or is yes. that the third one?
That's second one, yeah.
Okay. All right. Then I remembered something.
Yeah, the only reason I know anything about it is just from vague osmosis from knowing a little bit about what happens in Enter the Matrix, pretty much.
So oh, yeah, that's one. Right. Because they had that whole, like, multimedia approach to the sequels, didn't they?
I don't even know if I saw the third one.
You're a better man for it, Brad. The third one is a train wreck from start to finish.
Okay.
So have you, speaking of The Matrix, have you heard the I don't know if you want to call it theory or if it's something that the Wachowskis actually said themselves, the idea that the Matrix trilogy is just an entire allegory for being trans, which only disagree with because The Matrix isn't fucking about anything.
I mean, I've heard that and I can see exactly where they're coming from and it makes sense to me, but it's not going to keep me up at night. You know,
third opinion. I hadn't heard this.
My only objection to it is just like, no, that would require The Matrix to actually be the fucking about anything at all. And it's not. The Matrix is about, look at this cool shit we did with cameras.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Kung Fu.
You're not wrong.
I'm not disagreeing with the allegory in any way, except for just know that is a retrofitting.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things. Yeah.
And honestly,
there's no way they intended any of the shit when they were making it.
A lot of that hinges on the fact that one character, Switch, is, I forget how it goes, male out of the Matrix and female in the Matrix?
No. Switch was the same actress both in and out of the Matrix. They were going to do that, but they backed off.
Okay. I it's been a while since I've seen the Matrix, so yeah, okay. But that was the idea with the character, essentially.
Yeah.
So, okay, I see it. And honestly, I don't want to dig too far into that because I'm not going to step on any toes there. But basically what we're saying is that the Santa Claus 2 is an allegory for
The Matrix Reloaded.
No, it's the Santa Claus movies are basically all about the pressures of being a man in the 90s and also the 2000s. And honestly, it's kind of overblown and doesn't make any sense because, you know, as a man, you're supposed to be, you know, like Tim Allen and care about shit like cars and being an asshole to everybody around you. And that's not going to get you very far in today's America. So Tim Allen has to learn how to actually care about children and be nice to people and to take care of people, even if they're being, you know, assholes back to him. And I think we're going to see that when we get into the third film, because we're definitely talking about the third film, because the more I say it, the more we're going to have to do it.
Have you seen the third film, Joe?
I don't remember. I remember I was working at a movie theater when that third film came out. So I think I've seen bits and pieces of it. I know I've seen the trailer a 100,000 times.
I mean, all I can think is somehow with how bad this movie is, the only way you could make it worse is to add Martin Short to it.
I think you would be 100% right, John. But suffice it to say, The Santa Claus 2 is basically about plot convenience above everything else. Because, like, oh, okay, the evil despot fake Santa Claus builds a giant army of giant toy robots, like toy soldiers. But they're just, like, big lumbering plastic props, and I don't know how anybody plans to instill any kind of fascist regime with dumb shit like that.
I love the scene where after they throw the snowballs at the toy soldiers, the elves are always like, get them! And the camera lingers too long, and you see half of the elves just run all the way past all the toy soldiers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was tracking Bernard during that scene, and he literally just, like, runs all the way through to the end. Good job, movie. But yeah, the Santa Claus 2, it happens exactly as you think it happens. And I'm not going to say there's a comfort in that, because honestly, I don't think it's a very good movie. So let's go over to the crankometer now, shall we? Unless we have anything else to say about the Santa Claus 2. The crankometer, folks, is our patented X and Y axis that we use to rate Christmas movies. The X axis is how Christmassy a film is. That's the Christmas quotient. And the Y axis is how good the film is. The quality quotient. So friends, how Christmassy is the Santa Claus 2?
Pretty Christmassy. I mean, it's about Santa. Probably.
Yeah. I would object to the idea that being about Santa makes it that all that Christmassy. This yeah. movie could have taken place in July and be like, oh, Santa has to get married by Labor Day, because that's when the Christmas making toy season starts, and it wouldn't have been changed all that fucking much.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true.
The only thing that makes it necessarily take place at Christmas is the fact that Santa Jr., what the fuck is his name?
Charlie
is mad that the school doesn't have Christmas decorations up.
Yeah. And the only time we see Santa really like doing Santa Claus things is at the very end, and it's he goes home to his family, and like he comes down the chimney for his little niece, whose name I forget, and that's the only time we see him doing any of that stuff. Because this movie's not about that anymore. It's not about Santa Claus. It's about Scott Calvin finding a wife, and it doesn't matter when that happens. The fact of it being a film about Santa Claus and about the North Pole and all of that stuff doesn't really inform what the movie's actually about. So I'm going to say this is at least a zero, unless somebody can convince me otherwise.
Yeah, you make very good points. Okay. I don't have a strong counter argument.
All right. This is so the Santa Claus 2, we've decided, is a value neutral Christmas has Christmas as a value neutral element. So now the y-axis, how good is this film? How much did we actually enjoy it, having now seen it twice in the span of 3 years?
Oh, if you had told me a couple years ago that I would watch Santa Claus 2 of my own volition, I would have laughed in your face. But here we are. It's 2020.
My master plan has taken effect. I love it.
What's the over-under that somebody loses their audio again, and we're going to have to watch this a third time 4 years from now?
Oh, no. God. Like, knock on wood, my computer doesn't die in the next 20 minutes.
Here's what we're going to say. If somehow the audio fucks up on this, we will literally watch The Matrix instead and record an episode on that.
I will co-sign that, yes.
Yeah. I want to be clear. I'm not objecting to the Matrix trans allegory. I'm objecting to the idea that it was planned at the start, because The Matrix is a dumb fucking movie and not about a single thing at all. Like, there's no way there's Matrix is planned to be about anything.
We're picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah.
I think you're yeah.
And
I want to make it explicit what I'm getting at when I talk about The Matrix, though. That movie's dumb as hell. It's a stupid fucking action movie.
The central failing of the sequels is that they think people think that The Matrix is about something. So they try so fucking hard to make the sequels about something. And it does not work, because it does not matter.
Well, I mean, literally every single philosophy 101 class is required by law to mention The Matrix at this point. So of course they thought it was about something.
Yeah, because you can like bend The Matrix to be about anything if you try hard enough.
Like, it's about Equilibrium, and people thinking Equilibrium had to be about something too.
No, it's
Equilibrium
about...
didn't even think it needed about anything. It's about gun kata.
Yeah, Equilibrium is about how Kurt Vemmer loves guns. Okay, just chill out. What we're saying is that the Santa Claus 2 is not very good.
No,
it's not.
I'm going to say it's a solid negative 2. I honestly don't hate this, but I would be hard-pressed to want to ever watch it again on purpose.
Oh, yeah. If I wasn't playing Super Mario Kart the entire time, I would have been a lot madder at it, but it was very easy to have it on and not pay too much attention to it, because that's what you do on a movie review podcast.
Yeah, you don't watch the movie.
Yeah, I mean... In our defense, we watched this fucking movie before. It was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, and I've seen it multiple times already, so I've got a pretty good beat on how this film goes. But yeah, I mean, putting the cards on the table, I was doing dishes for the first hour of this film, so whatever.
You must have been washing each dish very slowly.
Also, cards on the table again. I was actually watching the film while I was slowly doing the dishes.
Okay. All right.
Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is obviously, we're not the target audience for it because we're not literal children. It's not that engaging, though. You can kind of see anything happening a mile away. Oh, yeah. He's going to marry the only other female character in the movie. Oh, there's tension. I'm pretty sure that'll get resolved by the end of the movie, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
There's no fucking stakes here at all.
-2 is where I would land as well.
And also, it's worth pointing out, this is, of the three Santa Claus films, this is the only one that's rated G. So it's like they knew that they were gearing this towards small children. So they make it as child-friendly as humanly possible, almost to the film's detriment, because, man, those toy soldiers are not very convincing.
Yeah, those are pretty much the scariest thing in the film, and other than just kind of being weird and creepy.
Yeah, it's a combination of, like you said, being for babies, and also just how mean-spirited anything is if you're actually old enough to follow the dialogue. Like, you're six or older and you can follow the dialogue. You're just like, wow, Santa's kind of a jerk.
And the one scene that really hammered that home to me was early in the film, you know, Santa's in his workshop doing his thing. And this one little, tiny little girl elf comes up to him and is like, Santa, would you like a cookie? And then he gets this look on his face and kind of looks straight into the camera and, like, does his smug Mr. Sarcastic bit and goes, gee, do I want a cookie? What do you think? Of course I want a cookie.
So, bad. So much of that, when they use, like, the Santa Grundlefly machine.
Yeah.
Curtis is like, wow, it looks great. And Santa's basically like, that's because it's me, you stupid fucking asshole.
Yes. Yeah. Dumb shit.
Then there's the one scene where Santa calls one of the elves a troll and it cuts, and it's the only non-white elf we've seen in the entire movie.
Yes!
Yikes.
I noticed that. And then, like, you think, okay, he's putting it on for the elves, for the children. So when he is having his scenes with the adults, Tim Allen's going to turn it off a little bit and be a more reasonable adult. But no, during that sleigh ride scene where he's taking the teacher to he's taking the principal to the teacher's, like, Christmas party, like, she's giving him her whole backstory, and they keeps cutting to Tim Allen, and he's, like, looking around like he'd rather be anywhere else during this entire scene. Like, he doesn't know what to do with himself in a serious moment. Oh, it's the worst.
I'm just imagining he's looking around me, like, looking at the fake snow, being like, is that? No, fake snow. Never mind.
He's looking at all the Coke and just having a white Christmas for himself. So, yeah, I think
fuck you, Tim Allen.
Fuck you, Tim Allen. Last Man Standing is a garbage TV show.
Oh, it's so bad. I told you guys about how bad it is, right?
Oh, yeah, we've talked about that.
Oh, Tim Allen's lead full into MAGA chud bullshit.
My wife used to watch, she liked Dr. Ken, and we used to just watch it on terrestrial TV, which means we'd have to tune in for, like, the last 5 minutes of Last Man Standing. Not willingly, she would.
Right.
I'd try to avoid it as much as humanly possible, and she'd turn it on. I'd usually mute it. But the times we did catch it, oh, it was so bad. It was like hating on millennials. It's like, what happened to good old fashioned work ethic? Like, that sort of thing. Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah,
you have no idea.
It is pure, like, follows Boomer. The exact form of fascist propaganda, where it's just like we are the strongest we've ever been, which is why we are also on the brink of destruction from literally everything. Like, it's Tim Allen's, like, the manliest fucking man, but, like, oh no, all of these women in this house with me are going to make my dick disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
only very, I can save you from bad. Myself. Which, hey, is the plot of the Santa Claus 2. God.
Yeah, just a little political lesson for you, though. If you ever watch any sort of fascist propaganda shit, that's what it does. It's, we are constantly the strongest, and also we are always the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, look at Donald Trump.
Everyone's
being so mean to him. It's so unfair.
It's very rude, very nasty. It's so awful. It's also completely warranted. So fuck off. Shut the fuck up. You're an asshole. Next question. Well, that settles it, friends. The Santa Claus 2 is not a very good film, and if you have Disney Plus, you can watch it whenever you want, especially 2 days before Labor Day, as we record this. So the Santa Claus 2 is a solid 0, -2 on our crankometer scale. And that makes me wonder, what did we rate the original Santa Claus in the first place?
Let's find out. And I never agree to it, but I'll go with negative two because, yeah, this I can't work up enough real anger at this movie.
It's nothing.
Whatever.
Kind of just there.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, the Santa Claus, we rated the Santa Claus, the original film, a positive five, positive one. It's super Christmassy and not that bad. And you know what?
I think I know why we went with that. The movie was a little more sincere. It didn't dip into pure strain. Tim Allen is just being Tim Allen.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that first film is kind of actually about him being a divorced dad and also Santa Claus. Like there's a thread running through that movie that this does not exist in this film. And this film is all the worse for it.
I'd say Tim Allen's kind of like snideness for what it is. It was very much toned down from what I remember in the first movie. Oh, the first movie had a reindeer fart in it too. Nice. It was toned down and it worked more because Scott Calvin was pretty beleaguered in the first movie. He was very much like trying to prove that he could hack it as Santa. And the second movie, no, I mean, it's just a fucking victory lap.
Yeah.
You know, you can't take a beleaguered victory lap. That's not how things work. That's how fascist propaganda works.
Do you think it also had something to do with, I mean, back when the original one came out, Tim Allen wasn't unknown, but he hadn't like reached the saturation that he had after Santa Claus one, where he'd been on like Home Improvement, Toy Story, Jungle to Jungle, like all of these things where he was like a known factor, so he had to like up the Tim Allen-ness of the character. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because this was like the first one was pre-Toy Story, and like it was contemporary with like the beginning of Home Improvement. So he wasn't like a big name yet.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. He thought, well, we got to punch this up. We got to make it more Tim Allen. People are paying to see the Tim Meister.
Yeah, and then the second one, it's him basically coasting on those fumes and going like, well, this is what people want. I better give it to them. And it just doesn't work the second time around.
It's like an inverse Adam Sandler.
Yes.
Go on.
Well, Adam Sandler, like Adam Sandler's first few movies, Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, are Adam Sandler turned up to 11. And then he got like taken seriously with Wedding Singer. And then after that, he's just like, no, people just show up because of my name. I don't have to try.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
We talked about this on Eight Crazy Nights. The moment he realized he could do his shtick without wearing pants, it was over. It was game over for him.
And now he does it without wearing pants in Italy or in Hawaii.
Well, it's more that he realized he doesn't even have to do the shtick, really.
It's true, yeah.
People will just remember him doing the shtick, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I'll give him money.
This is how he wins.
Oh, boy. Well, on that note, friends, I think we're going to have to call it a day here at Christmas Creeps HQ. Please stay tuned for our next episode when I'm calling our shot now, we will discuss The Santa Claus 3, The Escape Clause, starring Tim Allen, a Disney film by Disney.
Disney film for theaters.
rather watch The Matrix Reloaded.
But until then, friends, if you want to get at us on the internet any other way, you can find us on Twitter at Christmas Creeps or Facebook.com/Christmas Creeps. Or, hey, email us anything you want at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Do all the fun stuff that podcasts say you should do. Like us and subscribe on Apple, iTunes, Apple Podcasts is what it's called now, or Stitcher, or Amazon has their own podcast thing now, which I think we need to get on. Podchaser, any of that stuff, go and find us and like us and subscribe and leave star ratings and reviews. Just tell a friend about Christmas Creeps, because the holiday season kind of starts now, because people like to call this the Burr months now for some reason. And
fuck that.
The tide is rising, friends, and it's only going to go up from here. So join us for holiday season 2020. It might be the last one we ever get.
Someone please throw Kevin Pollak a life preserver. He is so very, very short.
Oh, geez, friends. That's going to have to do it. For Christmas Creeps, I've been Joseph Wade.
I'm Johnny Five the Human Robot.
Human tooth amount. 6 teeth. Teeth condition. A mix. The teeth are amazing. They were an anniversary present for my husband.
Good night, everybody.
Happy Christmas. Good night. Happy Christmas.